And our special guest tonight, Russell Targ, The End of Suffering, Limitless Mind, A Guide to Remote Viewing. We're going to open up the phone lines. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Russell Targ, our guest in your phone calls. Russell, now the $64,000 question. How does this happen? What is out there in the universe that permits remote viewing, permits the tapping in of consciousness to allow people to find themselves? What is it? Is it God? Is it something else?
You must be psychic, George. Going to say to you that I had a very interesting email where someone said, is it necessary to believe in God in order to develop psychic abilities? You must have just tuned into, I was just queued up for your question.
You've remote viewed me. You've taught me, Russell, and I'm looking at your computer screen
right.
As we
no,
speak.
No, it's just that there, for the moment, there's only one of us here in consciousness. And the answer is, of course, you don't have to believe anything. The important difference between a mystic and a believer, a mystic never asks you to believe anything. A mystic says, I have found that something works for me, and if I do a certain practice, that I have a certain experience. Mystic will say, if you sit down quietly once a day and breathe and learn to quiet your mind, then you'll feel better. Or you will be able to move from your ego-based chatter and suffering into spaciousness and love and joyfulness. A person will say, well, that sounds pretty good. What do I have to believe to do that? The answer, you don't have to believe anything. You just have to sit down, find 20 minutes a day, and be quiet. So a mystic, whether it's a Gnostic Christian or a Kabbalistic Jew, or a Buddhist, or a Hindu, or a Sufi, a mystic will never ask you to believe anything. They'll ask you to look at their practice, try that practice, and see how that works for you. And similarly with remote viewing, you don't have to, there's no secret handshake for remote viewing, nothing to believe. There's no secret handshake to end your suffering. It's just a process of mindfulness and letting go of your attachment to your ego and moving into being aware that you can move from ego into spaciousness. Does not require any belief in anything except love. Love is available. Love is who you are. Now, to really answer your question, which is perhaps the bigger question, if anything can be bigger than God, it's the idea we live in a inherently non-local universe. The nature of the space-time we live in allows us to be psychic. It's just a gift, the construction of the dimensionality. It's a, John Wheeler once said and described in the days when he was still interested in ESP, he said the explanation will be in the geometry and not in the fields. The idea that the reason that we can communicate with one another psychically is that there's no separation between us. The nature of the world we live in, the universe we live in, is that for consciousness, there's no separation. And I describe that in some detail on my website. I have a paper called The Speed of Thought that I wrote with physicist Elizabeth Rauscher. But basically, in the non-local world that we live in, there's no separation for consciousness. So it's a gift from the universe that allows you to be psychic.
All right, to the phones we go with our very special guest tonight, Russell Targ. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, hello. It's a pleasure to be online. My name is Cynthia, and what I need to say is I have touched base with what has been mentioned, and my heart's desire is to return and to progress from there. But initially, fear and sadness, as I said in my fast blast, fear and sadness surfaces because it seems as if I'm coming back to the end of myself once again, and it's scary.
Scary to do anything that's unexplained, but if you do it through love rather than through power or the desire to get something, if you just say, as I move into spaciousness, I become in touch with my own loving nature, then there's nothing to be scary about it at all. You just sit quietly and move into this spaciousness without any thought about, am I doing it right or will I get something? You then become in touch with this flow of loving awareness, this warm, loving syrup that's available to flood your body. That's the reward for stopping the chatter. Nothing to be scared about.
So then, are we to discount our connectedness with others, with significant individuals, whomever they may be, has been a quest for my entire life. I have always been the one who was left behind, and I'm blown off as being too serious about life and or too emotional, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the longing of my heart is to have that connectedness with someone. And as I listen to you speak about how we are all a part of the whole, in terms of the spaciousness and our position in this universe, I guess I'd say, can you tell me that the connectedness that I'm searching or seeking for?
Yes, I can answer your question. It's very important to have a spiritual community to hang out with. In Buddhism, they talk about the three jewels. One is the Buddha who gave the teaching. The other is the Dharma, which is what he taught. And the third is the Sangha, which is your spiritual community, and is considered the most important for you to have a group of spiritually minded friends who respect what you're trying to do, respect your path and your process, and will help you. This is not a solo effort, and we as human beings need the compassion and connection to other people, not necessarily a boyfriend or a lover, but a spiritual community. And it's often one of life's goals is to try and find that group of people, which you might have to create.
You know, Russell, I've always called this force that's out there almost like a wireless internet, where all of us are connected all the time. What would you say about that?
I think that we are connected. I agree with that. I think the caller wants some physical people to be connected to. One way of doing it, which may not be your cup of tea, but I did and found successful, is that I got interested in A Course in Miracles. I don't know if you've read that.
Yes, I did.
I think we may have lost our caller.
Yeah, she's listening on her radio now, wherever
but,
she may be.
If you go to the website for Miracle Distribution Center, they will put you in touch with some miracle-minded people who are mystics, and a loving group of people who will get you started. So Miracle Distribution Center will find you some spiritually minded friends who are not trying to sell you anything at all.
That's
and
good.
A Course in Miracle is a valid path in this direction.
I think so, too. East of the Rockies, you're on with Russell Targ. Hi there.
Good evening, George. This is Mike. I'm driving. I just drove through Atlanta.
Hey, Mike.
I had a quick question and a comment. Your guest tonight goes hand in hand with your guest last night that the ego seems to be blocking most of our enlightenment there. My question is that for the goal of to be, of course, empty, to be happy, how do you balance this with the desire to always be a searcher for constant enlightenment? And how does that go hand in hand with the Buddhist teachings of becoming more and more enlightened for each existence. Am I making myself clear with my question there?
Yeah, I think that a Buddhist wouldn't say that he's searching for anything. That is that's a path for suffering. What you want to do is be peaceful with who you are, and give up the things that are making you unhappy, rather than searching for the magic cure. That the extent to which you can the killer is spending our lives defending the story of who we think we are. It's defending that story that's really the killer. Enlightenment, that it was Andrew Cohen who had this very nice quote that I like, where he says, enlightenment is the thrill of not wanting anything. And as you go through, enlightenment's a process. No, nobody is enlightened all the time, in my opinion. But you have moments of being awake, and you suddenly notice what's going on. And typically we then drop back to our ordinary self. So the more time you can spend in this spacious mode of awareness, recognizing the silly things you do, the more awakened you become.
Thank you. Can I ask one simple follow-up question?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Did I answer your question?
Thank you, sir. You were talking about not having any particular talent for piano playing. Is it possible that in our past life that you were not a piano player, or is it possible that some of the people that may have a talent for musical ability were musicians in their pastime, gives them that talent, or is that just a fruitless question?
It's possible, but it's hard to know the answer. That we think that certainly in the most, I believe more in genetics than in past lives. That I think that young Mozart was talented because his father was talented, and young Bach was gifted because his father was gifted. I certainly believe in musical families and artistic families. There's certainly good evidence that some aspect of ourself does survive bodily death and reappears. But it's an interesting speculation, and in a certain sense doesn't have any action item for me. That is, whether or not I was a piano player in my previous life or a psychic or a magician in my previous life, it sort of doesn't affect what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your perspective. Thank you very much, George. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Appreciate you being part of the program.
I think that the fact that some aspect of ourselves survives makes us worry less about dying. Because dying is a part of the human condition along with gravity. Because everything dies. So I think that if you view death as part of living, it makes it less scary.
Russell, how fortunate do you find yourself that you have been able to tap into this power?
Oh, it's a blessing. Now, I should say, I mean, talk about previous lives. I was interested in psychic stuff since I was a child. I mean, as a little kid, I used to play cards and I used to win. And it was really quite I lived in New York as an 11, 12-year-old and used to hang out at the magic shops and the flea circus on 42nd Street. So I've been interested in magic my entire lifetime.
And you've been tuning yourself up all along, I think.
I wouldn't be surprised. Haunting the magic stores, watching the flea circus.
And getting better.
Listening to late night radio in New York.
Long John Neble.
That's right.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome to the show, sir.
How you doing? My name is, I can't say my name. Just call me Rocket Man and it'll be fine. But I have quite an issue. 3 years ago, I spoke to my uncle from Germany, which I haven't talked to in a long time. He told me that he found from Germany, he saw that I had a tumor in my left kidney, about 25 millimeters in size. Anyway, I did go to get an MRI 2 weeks after that, and sure enough, there was a tumor in my left kidney the size of 25 millimeters, exactly as he said. But he had also said, don't worry about it because it's all gone. The destruction has stopped. Now the body has to heal. Ever since then, my uncle has been teaching me this. And what he does is, I don't know if you ever heard of, well, I can't say this word either, but it has to do with dowsing. And I've been doing that ever since. And I have successfully actually performed certain things. But people just don't know that I do this because I don't advertise it. And I've found many answers, I think. And I have not talked to any professionals in this field at all. And I listened to the program tonight, and this is the first time that I actually called in. I was motivated to call in because it had what Russell was talking about was related to what I do.
Well, I really encourage you to pursue this intuitive diagnosis. You might like my book, Limitless Mind, because I spell out in a lot of detail what people know about it and how to do it. So you probably learned something about intuitive diagnosis mm-hmm. in Limitless Mind.
I have this question. It's not a question, but it's a statement. The information that I get from someone on the other side of the world or anywhere, distance doesn't matter, actually comes from a plasma field that's around the Earth, and which is made up of 12 different levels. Each level signifies something. Whenever anything happens, anything at all, down to the littlest thing to the biggest thing, this gets recorded. I call it the world's hard drive. And dowsing.
Well, I would say that many people have this kind of information coming to them, but they also tend to have different models for how it gets to them. So the fact that people have psychic abilities, intuitive abilities, and healing abilities is absolutely true. Just how it works is not so clear.
I was going to say, it doesn't matter how it gets to them as long as it gets to them, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Russell, throughout the ages...
It may take us a long time to understand how it gets to them.
Has this been practiced for thousands of years?
Many thousands of years. Patanjali, who wrote 100 years before Jesus, wrote in the Sutras of Patanjali, he said, the meaning of life is to become one with God. He was a Hindu. He believed in God. And he said, In the steps along this way, as you learn to control your mind chatter, your mind waves, was his word, you will find that you can see into the distance, see into the future, heal the sick, and diagnose illnesses. And he wrote this all down in quite a lot of detail in the Sutras of Patanjali 2,500 years ago, or 2,100 years ago.
Okay, well, stay with us. We're going to continue with Russell Targ, and we're going to continue with your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Russell's website, espresearch.com. He'll get your emails. He's answering a few of them during the breaks. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we've got a great group of shows for you throughout the week, and then we'll start it again next week for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Russell Targ, our guest. Russell, by the way, the book, The End of Suffering, how can people get it?
They can get it from Amazon.com, which is the easiest way, or from my website, ESPResearch.com.
So, okay.
Readily available, inexpensive book. You can get
Let's
it
go
from
to
my website, ESPResearch.com, or from Amazon.
You got it. Back to the phones we go. We'll go to you. You are on Coast to Coast Wildcard Caller. Hi there.
Hey, Jonathan from Seattle.
Hey, Jonathan.
Gary Busey says that fear is false evidence appearing real. So, and thanks for having him on the other day, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He'll be on again, too.
True. Oh, awesome. Russell, is it true? Can you remote view 2012? What do you see as we approach the end of the Mayan calendar? What remote viewings have you seen for that?
I have not done that. People like Daniel Pinchback have written a book about 2012. He doesn't see it the end of the world, but he sees it a time of realignment. Rather,
is it a golden age, or is that too optimistic?
Well, transitions are rarely golden.
No, but on the other side.
On the other side, things are going to get better rather than worse.
What do you think about Ed Dames's Earth changes? He says there will be an earthquake maybe on the west coast of America. Is that fear-mongering, or is that true?
I'm unaware of anything that Ed Dames said ever coming true, so I can't comment.
All right. Have a good day. And Alex Jones is a prophet. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Appreciate you being part of Coast to Coast.
I did get a good question. You want to take one of some questions somebody asked me?
Yeah, sure thing.
He said, I'm a member of Mensa. Does being intelligent help you do remote viewing? And my answer, of course, is being intelligent helps you do everything well. Remote viewing is basically an intellectual ability where you have to learn to separate the psychic signal from the mental noise. You have to separate out the images that come to you on your mental screen from memory, imagination, and your desire to name things and do analysis. So, in general, the people who have done very well at remote viewing have also been quite intelligent.
And you don't need to have a college degree to be intelligent.
No, indeed.
In Ingo Swann's book, Penetration, Russell, he talked about structures on the moon. What do you think of that? Do you think, Ingo was imagining things, or are there things up there?
Well, I like Ingo very much and have a lot of respect for his ability.
Me too.
He's also a science fiction writer, has written several books of science fiction, so I have no way to evaluate whether this is a work of fiction or whether work of remote viewing. There's no way. I'm not. I just can't comment.
Or a combination of the both.
Or a combination. That is, he describes how the UFOs come out of the water and so forth, right next to where you're standing. That sounds like great adventure stories, but I'm not convinced that really occurred. But it could have.
Where is the most far-off place you have ever remote viewed?
Oh, That would get into. During the SRI program, I had a trip to a UFO, but that sounds like Pat Price always talks about UFOs. And one night I went adventuring and had an experience that was quite realistic on a UFO and came back and described to Pat the things that I had seen. I see a number of bodies sort of stretched out under hair dryers. And he says, it's a very dangerous place you were. That's the body storage area. You're lucky they didn't grab you and keep you there. So I probably a distant UFO was the furthest I personally had gone.
Are you a believer in the extraterrestrial life somewhere out there?
Oh, yeah. I think that it's extremely likely that there's extraterrestrial life. I don't think that's necessarily the source of the UFOs, but it's... with billions of planets, the easy answer to your question is, of course, there's extraterrestrial life. Whether or not it's intelligent, we don't know.
True.
But I think that no informed person disagrees about the extreme likelihood of intellectual life. We just don't know how much progress it's made.
And if you said the UFOs may not be from another world, where do you think it might be from? Another dimension?
They may be from our future.
That could be.
They may be time and space travelers rather than just space travelers.
I've always thought that is a possibility as well, Russell. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Janet. I'm from Dallas.
Hi.
Russell, I was looking over your website. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I've been actively involved going on 11 years with a 12-step program. And this is where I started my journey out of tremendous pain. And I really believe that pain is the touchstone for growth. No one's going to change anything unless it becomes so hard to keep going that they have to change. But everything I was looking at in your website, I felt like I was at a meeting reading it, because everything you said, like, it's a process, it's a journey, this connectedness, and it's not religion. What I have found is a God of my own understanding, and we have things like, we say that religion is for people who are afraid of going to hell, and spirituality is for people who have been there. But
that's a very good line. I like that.
Yeah, we have lots of good lines, like, I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I've heard a guy in a meeting say, you know, when you go to the Cowboy game and they get in the huddle down there in the field, they're talking about me. You know, we talk about how self-centered we are. But anyway, I have been forced, it's a matter of life or death, for me to be able to live in my skin, to keep myself happy in my sobriety.
No one can do that for you, of course.
I have to stay out of myself and practice my spirituality. What I have come to find is that there are no coincidences, and I have a whole new way of looking at life. Success is not money for me anymore, and it's like I see like it's all a puzzle that comes together, and not just me is helped. It's always two or three people are helped. It's like this awesome thing. Situations come up for me that I think are just terrible, but I know that I'm going to get a lesson or a blessing out of it, because what happens is I grow. Here's my question. You're relating this to remote viewing. My awareness of the oneness and connectedness with my higher power, that it's within all of us, this journey that I'm on, is this my beginning toward what you are actually talking about, as far as correlating it with remote viewing, ESP, that kind of thing?
Well, remote viewing would not be directly connected to a higher power. Remote viewing gives you an idea that you are part of something bigger than yourself.
I'm trying to find your connection with the two.
My connection is really the idea that there's universal consciousness that we can tap into.
Mm-hmm.
And that remote viewing, in order to do remote viewing, you have to stop the chatter, as I keep saying.
I call it the committee.
That's just fine. And it gives you an opportunity to move into this feeling of spaciousness.
Uh-huh.
And when you begin to move into the spacious feeling, you have available this flow of loving awareness, which some people say is your own divinity, some people say is God, but I'm comfortable saying it's just this flow of love that's available, and it's who you are.
Okay.
I mean, as Jesus said, the kingdom of God is within you.
Right.
You don't have to go any other place. It's who you are. And everybody has their own way of saying that.
I heard a poet, and I'll never forget this, it's very short, and he said, I was on the lip of insanity. I stood at the door and knocked. The door opened. I was knocking from the inside. And that was very awesome to me. But what I'm thinking is how this connectedness, something that I'm struggling with, I'll get a phone call, which will give me the answer. I'll run into somebody. There's all of these things that I see not as just a coincidence. Is this what you're talking about?
Yes. Now, I think you might find the end of suffering to be very interesting. There's nothing in there that would argue with the 12-step program that I'm very sympathetic to. It may give you another way of spinning things you already know.
I think it will, too. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Russell Targ. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Bob in San Jose again.
Hey,
it's
Bob.
Wonderful.
Thanks.
To talk to you. Absolutely enjoying your guest. Russell is an amazing speaker.
Yes, he is.
My question is, I think his insights into the nature of our personal narratives and the scripts that we write are so insightful into the individual psyche. My question is what happens when we look at that same narrative, when it takes the form of a collective narrative in the form of what we have today in the form of fundamentalist religion and and how that has become something of a trance induction, that everybody is so attached to the story and their narrative that it has led to the institutional denaturing of the mystical, and has really, really kind of lost what is a true spiritual dimension that definitely exists. But we are now into this form of mass psychosis that it seems like religion has become the Y2K virus of the human operating system.
Well, this happens when a tyrant creates an external enemy. That is, I was reading a Buddhist book that had a quote from Hermann Goering from the Nuremberg trial. And Nuremberg and Goering at Nuremberg was defending his life and saying, people want to know, how did this happen in Germany? He said, well, nobody wants to go to war. It's very hard to get the slob in the field to want to fight. But if you can create an external enemy, and then anyone who doesn't want to fight that enemy becomes a traitor and unpatriotic, then everyone will go and fight the enemy, even though it's against his interest. And I think that there's certainly people out there who don't like us, but as George said in his intro, you can't fight the entire world. And I think we're creating a American craziness where we're viewing the entire world as an enemy, and that's very unhealthy.
Russell, why does it seem that people who are more psychically inclined tend to be more peace-loving?
Oh, because that's easy. Because they recognize that there's no separation. They recognize that those other people are not only like us, they are us. That is, psychic people or spiritually minded people recognize that there's no separation between the brown-skinned people and the yellow-skinned people and anybody else.
Where does evil fit into this equation? Evil may be on both sides.
Well, my opinion is that there is no evil. There's only good. See, it's a physicist in me that comes out and says, we know there's no cold. There's only heat. You can have more heat or less heat or no heat. And if there's no heat, then we feel cold. But we wouldn't say it's a cold machine. We would say it's a heat with no machine.
How about the lack of good?
I think there's certainly the lack of good, but I don't feel that there are sinister forces. I feel that there are good people and people who are lacking good for a variety of reasons. I don't think that there's a devil who made you do it. I don't think there's a force of evil incarnate.
You don't think people can be possessed, taken over by this evil?
That's sort of a two-part question. I think that people might be taken over, but I don't think they're evil forces. I think they're evil people. I think they're bad. I mean, evil is really carries a lot of baggage with it.
Yeah, it's a broad stroke there.
I think they're cruel, greedy, egotistical, murderous people. Calling them evil complicates it because it implies that the devil made them do it, and I don't believe that.
Well, what would we call them then? Can we categorize them?
You'd call them murderous,
people.
Dangerous people.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line while we have a few minutes. Go ahead.
Gerhardt in Oakland, California.
Hello, Gerhardt.
Russell, you couldn't be more wrong. Evil is so alive in the world, it's not even funny. I love my cats. I love my dogs. I love my Merlot and occasionally my Burgundy. And I love to go to the beach and watch string bikinis. And we are facing a 7th century death worship cult, which would take all of that away from me. Every little bit of it. And, you know, you said it started with the Crusades. No, sir, you're completely wrong. It started 600 years before that. You know, Buddhist navel gazers are completely incapable of dealing with this situation of what we are facing now and today. And I have to tell you, sir, that I'm not going to allow anybody to take any of those things away from me. Our culture is superior.
Well, have you read the Old Testament?
Sir, I have read the Old Testament and the New Testament.
In Mosaic law.
I am not a Christian. I am a pagan, okay? Mother Earth and Father Sun. Everything else is crap, all right? And this includes Mohammedanism, which is a death worship cult from the backside of the end of nowhere, what we now call Saudi Arabia.
Okay, I get the drift. I want to point out that they're not alone in that in Mosaic law, which is what the beginning of Judaism in the beginning of the Bible, you're instructed to stone your brother and sister, your wife, your husband, if they blaspheme. So the idea of killing off and stoning people who don't agree with you has a great religious tradition, not limited to Islam.
And we always seem to wrap things up on a interesting note, Russell. I want to, first of all, thank you for spending the evening with us. And
very happy to be with you.
Again, I do appreciate you taking emails from our listeners as well.
Oh, yeah. It's very stimulating. You never know what you're going to find.
ESPResearch.com. That's how you get to Russell Tarr. Go take a look at his website. We're talking about his book, The End of Suffering, that he co-wrote, Russell Tarr and J.J. Hertak, who's been a regular guest on the program as well. How is J.J. these days?
He's very well. I see him frequently. We're going to be at a workshop in Tempe, Arizona in early November.
Will you give them our best, would you?
I'll do that.
Thanks, Russell. I appreciate you being
on. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm happy to be with you.
Russell Targ, he is an enlightened person, isn't he, when you deal with remote viewing and really trying to reach within yourself to end all kinds of suffering. Well, the programs will continue all week long, and we've got some home runs for you, so you make sure that you've got your dial set right there where you can get Coast to Coast AM. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.